Hello again, Bob Chaundy here with another Considering Art podcast, in which I talk to an artist about their work and something of their life. My guest today is the young British photographer Connor Daly. Connor was born in 1994 in the Channel Island of Jersey, where he still lives, and despite serious health issues, has gone on to achieve success with his abstract fine art photography. Connor works in series, using vibrant colour, geometric shapes and lines, spatial ambiguity and other compositional effects, in the manner, in fact, of abstract painters. "One of the things I want to do in photography," he once said, "is to photograph mundane things beautifully and beautiful things mundanely." His work has been shown in exhibitions both at home and abroad, and I spoke to Connor from his Jersey home. Connor Daly, welcome to the Considering Art podcast. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. Thanks for having me.
And you're sitting in your home in Jersey, I guess.
Yes, so I've got a studio where I live. So I've got basically got a big apartment, big flat, and it's basically split in half. So I've got a big studio on one side and then an office space, which I'm currently in, and I've got a living space on the other side.
Now, you were brought up in Jersey. What sort of background did you have?
Yeah, so I was born here, grew up here most of my life. To be honest with you, there wasn't really much to say for the sort of first 20-odd years until I really, because once I was 20, I managed to go to art college, so I was there for 2 years. My dad's an artist, so that kind of encouraged me to pursue, you know, the arts. And then it really only kind of got my life started to kind of momentum when I went to university. So I went to Bournemouth for 3 years.
So what sort of artist is your father?
My dad's a painter. Funny enough, my dad actually studied in Worthing, and I ended up, when I started my sort of career in photography, I actually ended up in Brighton by complete coincidence. But my dad, yeah, he studied as well for university. So he spent 3 years at Worthing as a figurative painter.
And did you ever try painting yourself?
I did. And my dad, you know, bless him, he did try to teach me, but I was just, honestly, I was just terrible at it. I could never get it to work. I could never seem to engage with it. Like he could. For him, it was just a natural thing. For me, it was just hitting my head against a wall, you know, and photography just seemed to kind of fall on my lap.
And did you have any photographers in the family?
I did, yes. Yeah. So my granddad was a photographer for about 30 years. And he's quite famous locally, just kind of in that, you know, he's been around for so long and he did so much work. So I think I've actually been scanning his archive for the last few years, his film negatives. I think we've estimated it's about 200,000 pictures.
Gosh.
Yeah, taking over a period of about 30 years. And to be honest, obviously a lot of it, you know, as he says, a lot of it isn't, because a lot of it was sports, so a lot of it isn't very good, as you would say. But we managed to get about 5,000 pictures, which mostly is just family and friends. So that's the one side of the archive, and the next part is going to be getting through all the sports and all the general sort of stuff.
So you went to art school, as you say. Did you sign up to actually study photography, or was it just art in general?
Yeah, so at the start, it was kind of a mixed batch. So I was just trying different things out, because we were taught all sorts of things. So we taught about sculpture, painting, drawing. I mean, it was so broad, and textiles as well. So we got to try a lot of different things. And I only really started on photography probably just coming to the end of my first year, leading into the next one. That's when I kind of went, no, this is it for photography. It was actually a book by Robert Wilson, who incidentally I ended up assisting many years later. But it's his book, Helmand, which I've got a copy of. It's signed copy from him. That's actually what essentially started me on the path to photography. And that's when I kind of fully engaged with it, said, this is what I'm doing. And then for the next year, it was all about photography, and then on to university, and then
Helmand, the province in Afghanistan, was it war photography?
Yeah, so Rob did I believe it was a commission with the British Royal Legion, and basically he was commissioned to go out there and photograph the soldiers and some of the locals and the fighters. So the book was basically all portraits. It's a big series. When he shot them on at the time, I can't remember what it was, but basically it was big Hasselblad, mini format. I think it might have been a H3D, I can't remember which one it was, because it was quite a few years ago. But at the time, this was considered, you know, top-end, high resolution. So we had these very detailed, you know, close-up portraits. And given the, you know, just the quality of the camera, the detail was just incredible. And that's kind of what, you know, started me on the, because when I started doing photography, it was mostly portraiture. And that's what started that journey through portraiture. And it kind of, and obviously now my work's expanded, but joke at the start, it was just portraiture, portraiture, portraiture. That's all I did. And then Rob's book basically started that.
Did you ever think about photojournalism?
Yes. So I did originally, yeah. So there was think my granddad obviously did, you know, local journalism. So he worked with the local newspaper. So that originally was kind of thinking, don't want to go into, you know, maybe like do sports like he did, or go to photograph wars, things like that. So there was a lot in my, when I was younger, there was a lot in my mind about, you know, where do I go with this? And things have just kind of gone, you know, then made them taken a natural path. But I think, yeah, many years ago, when I was younger, probably more, I'd say probably say immature, I probably thought, you know, had more grandiose ideas about what I would do. But obviously the realities of these things, as I got older and learned more about them, I think my choices became more limited. I pulled back a little bit and looked at the wider picture.
When you studied at Bournemouth, did you find it fine? Did you enjoy the course?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, yes and no. Like, I think it's a bit of a grey area for me. Like, there were definitely things I enjoyed, like having the access to the fantastic facilities. I mean, you know, we had about £3 million worth of facilities available to us, which was quite amazing. So I think that from that point of view, being able to have access to great equipment, being able to go out and, you know, take good equipment to go do projects and kind of experiment was great. But I think that the rigidness of, you know, the formal education didn't really work for my kind of more adventurous personality. So that kind of is something I struggle with quite a lot. So it kind of, in a way, in one hand it was good, one hand it was bad. I think a lot of assistants that I've actually worked with in the past have had similar experiences. They said, yeah, we love the equipment. You know, we love the access that it gave us to go out and do stuff, but we kind of struggled to kind of get with the program, so to speak, and to, you know, stick with the way that the course is run.
Where did you get that adventurous personality from, do you think?
Probably my mum. My mum is a big adventurer, a very adventurous person. She doesn't do work creatively, but she's obsessed with sports. She's rode across the Atlantic, taken a couple of marathons, traveled across the world, literally. So I think that sort of travelling sort of instinct comes from her, probably, I'd say.
Didn't you go on adventures with her when you were younger?
Yeah, so we did quite a lot of travelling when we were younger. So we did, can I look back now? So when we were, my sister must have been 8 and I was 6. So we did 3 months in Thailand. Mum basically, it was just coming to summer holidays and she said, right, we're going to Thailand. And then we were travelling on foot, basically, and obviously through trains and everything else for 3 months. And then a couple of years later, we did Australia for 2 months. We did a month in a camper van traveling across Australia, and then we did a month in a villa. So we had a few friends, mum's friends with us as well.
That's amazing for someone so young. How did you feel at the time? Did you find it very exciting? Or
yeah, I think at the time, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, looking back, I don't have any bad memories. I think it's all very positive memories, and it's definitely served me well in my confidence to, you know, to be able to just go out places and not be worried about where I'm going. I've been to a lot of places since, obviously, but it has given me kind of a confidence in traveling, which some people might not necessarily have if they've sort of remained in one area for a long period of time.
Anyway, from adventures in Thailand and Australia, you took a picture in a Jersey car park in 2017, yes. Going from the excitement to mundane. You said it made quite an impression upon you, was in a turning point. In what way?
So the turning point of that picture represents isn't something that I understood at the time. It's something that I understood in retrospect, because when I took that picture, I just graduated university. And as I mentioned, I had mixed feelings about my experiences in university. You know, where was I going? What was the plan looking forward in photography? So when I took that picture, I think it must have been maybe a couple of months after, I was walking home after work one day, and a guy that I as previously assisted at university only a few times said, you know, you're available over for a job. But the thing is, he actually assumed I was in the UK, but I don't know this at the time. He assumed I was in the UK and I just left university instead. And he knew I was from Jersey. I said, yeah, cool, I'm available, I'll come over. Long story short, the job was cancelled last minute, and then he managed to get my expenses covered. So I was like, okay, well, you know, and I said, I've got a few days in the UK. So I went to go see a friend in Brighton who's from Jersey. And then I don't know how it happened exactly. I basically just ended up staying. Somehow I just went, you know what? I'm here. let's give it a go and just see what happens. And it just kind of went from there, really. I mean, it was all complete chance. They will always tell me this, there was no plan in place. And I think that's what goes back to what my mum's kind of taught me and what I've gained from her, is that I'd had no plan. I had about 500 quid available. I had 500 quid in my bank account, and somehow I made it work for 2 years. Obviously, you know, working since, but it's that ability to put myself in a kind of be stuck in a corner and be able to work my way out of it. But yeah, I actually told him later on, and when I ended up, I worked to him, maybe a year later, and I actually mentioned to him, said, like, basically explained what happened. He couldn't believe it. He said, I didn't realize you were in Jersey. I wouldn't have offered you a job if you were. So if he had asked, that whole journey might have never happened. So it's quite funny looking back.
You moved to London, didn't you, soon after Brighton? With a more apprentice work assisting photographers. Were you doing any fine art, or was it just commercial work?
Most of the projects I was working on as an assistant were commercial work. So I was working on campaigns for food brands, for Lego. Did a load of work for Lego with a friend of mine who's a photographer, and everything in between. To be honest, I mean, did a lot of work with Will Price, an architectural photographer. So a lot of that was a mixture of editorial and commercial work. So for his commercial clients, and obviously his magazine clients as well. So people like Home and Country, a lot of the main architecture magazines. So that was really good fun, actually, working for Will. And then with Still Life, it was a mixture of Holiday Gadec doing Lego, working for other brands. And then for the food brands, it was all Karen Thomas, who's quite well known. Also worked with Joseph Ford, an advertising photographer. So we got to work on some cool campaigns, which is good fun.
Do you still do commercial work to kind of fund your fine artwork?
So at the moment, a lot of my fine artwork is a mixture of grant funding and self-funding, because I'm not currently able to pursue any commercial work just due to ongoing health reasons. I haven't been able to fully commit to it yet. I'm hoping maybe next year we can get back to normal. But at the moment, it's just not worth taking the risk. But I have the long-term plan for commercial work is to do work for big charities, so predominantly cancer charities if possible.
Well, we come on to that in a minute. But in 2020, you, according to your biog, you had an intense experience in a London supermarket. What on earth was that?
I was living in Tottenham at the time. I was in a warehouse with some circus performers, funny enough.
Circus?
Yeah, circus performers, yeah. Yeah, that was a good laugh. Yeah, they were all freelance festivals. It was brilliant. And yeah, so I was walking the other way to the Lidl, about a two-minute walk. And this is when COVID was just kind of... No one's really sure what it was yet. It was in that sort of limbo phase where something was definitely going on, but no one was really clear what was going on. But they were starting to put down lockdown procedures, things like social distancing, all that stuff that was going on. So anyway, so I was in a queue in Lidl. There must have been about half an hour waiting in the queue, about 100 people or something crazy. And I think they were letting elderly people in first to get their shopping and everything. And as we were let in for the rest of us, it was like a zombie apocalypse film. People just went rushing in. And like literally, I thought, like, God, it's going to be a stampede. You know, people were like sort of like jumping around, and it was honestly madness. I mean, me and another guy were just standing there. We stepped aside, just going, what are they doing? We were just like, you know, someone's going to get hurt.
What, rushing for the toilet rolls, I suppose.
You know, I think that's what it was. Honestly, it was, I could not believe that kind of what was going on. I mean, I understand it. People didn't know what it was. But at that point, I just went, I need to get out of Jersey. So it didn't take me long after that to make my decision.
Yeah, and you went back to Jersey. You became a bit disillusioned with becoming a photographer, I guess, because you took a job as a stonemason.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think at that point, because, you know, obviously I was still speaking to a lot of photographers I worked for and friends of mine that were assistants and other photographers, so I was very much in tune with what was going on in the industry. People were updating me, and we were, you know, seeing to keep me up to date what was going on. And as far as, you know, the way it was described to me was just that, you know, the industry just died, not died, but it just shut down overnight. I mean, quite a few people I know, assistants and photographers, they were thinking, I'm going to go out of business, you know, I'm going to have to give this up because, you know, my bank account's being drained. And it was horrible, you know, to watch them go through that. I mean, I've always known it was a very precarious industry, and I always understood that. But I think that COVID really set that in stone, and it really made me realise, you know, this might not be the way forward.
And then to make matters worse, as you mentioned before, you went down with advanced stage bowel cancer. That's very young to get that, isn't it? That must have been a hell of a shock.
I still can't understand it sometimes, how unlucky that is. I mean, the way they described it to me, and this is one of my nurses told me this, that in 20 years I've been working with bowel cancer, I've seen, I think she said, one or two people in your age have it in 20 years, and that's in a population in Jersey of 100,000, if you think about it like that. So it is extremely rare, but it does happen. And that was just one of those. It just got me in the end.
Can you see a response to that in any of your subsequent photographic series?
Yeah, so the experience itself, I documented, so to speak, in my series, Schwarzwald Radius, Textures, and then After Treatment in From Here to Eternity. So those three bodies of work explore the kind of different aspects of that experience, you know, physically, emotionally.
Now, I should say that I've looked at those series and they're very atmospheric. You have sort of misty skiscapes, fields and roads, often with very low horizons. Mm-hmm. I get a sense of emptiness, of solitude. Did that reflect your mood at the time?
Yeah, so that's the thing, is that, you know, each project reflects a different aspect of the experience. So, for example, you know, Textures represents the, in a sense, the tumor itself, or what I felt the tumor was doing to me. It was decaying, you know, it was something that was inside me, you know, and my body was not physically as such, but it felt like a sense of experiencing my body decaying, as it were, you know, being by this kind of thing inside me that you can't really, you know, it's there, but you can't really sense it. And then, you know, with the Schwarzwald Radius series, it was seascapes. And that sort of describes the sort of the loneliness and the isolation that came with going through this. You know, it's something that obviously I was very, you know, I was heavily supported by family and friends. And as soon as, you know, it happened, so to speak, everyone I know and I've worked with, everyone came around, you know, rallied around me, which is great. But it is something that you do experience very much on your own. It's not something that people can help and they can try to understand it, but it's very personal. It's very something you go through on your own, in a sense, despite, you know, the support you get.
And indeed, I think your series are really personal. Harking back to your car park picture, I noticed that there's a lot of geometric elements in it, and some colour, which is a foretaste of things to come. I think that you say in your artist statement that your work goes against prevailing inclinations in photography, and you say which are indicative of heavy consumption of literature and photographic theory. Are you saying that you were heavily into literature and photographic theory, or the prevailing photography was that?
I do read theory. I do understand photography, but there does seem to be within photography a very select group of people that are gatekeepers, so to speak, of photographic theory. And I think that some people take what they say far too literally and as the gold standard of theory. And I say, well, that's just not true. I don't believe that. I think that I actually did speak to a famous photography theorist and ask him some guidance on my dissertation. He gave some good feedback. Yeah, no, you've got Susan Sontag, Robin Baths, Laura Mulvey, and there's a few others I can't remember, but there's about, you know, five or six that I can think of that are, you know, considered to be the epitome of photography theory. And I just think, I read a lot of their literature, and I thought, you know, you're making interesting points and that's great, but I don't think that they're saying anything particularly unique or groundbreaking. And I think that kind of bothered me in a way, because it didn't feel to me that what I was writing or what I was using as a contextual reference was pushing the boundaries of, you know, of photography. So that's how I felt at the time. I mean, you know, obviously my opinions are probably more broader now, but at the time it did feel like I was being restricted, is probably what it comes down to.
Okay, well, what you've done instead is used very vivid colour, tone and composition all intersecting together in your various series. Are you influenced more by painters than other photographers?
Yes, absolutely. Like, yeah, 100%. Has been like that for a long time. Yeah, that's the funny thing, is that it does seem to be quite common that photographers will reference other photographers, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to do. It's a normal thing to do. But for me, being, I suppose, coming from an artistic background through my dad and art college and everything else, I would say that painters are referenced more in my work than actual photographers. I think photographers are very useful to me in the way they compose an image, you know, and also cinematographers like John Ford. His approach to using horizon lines for framing pictures runs through all my work, basically. Every picture I take, there's some element of his way of thinking about perspective and composition. That runs through my work as well.
And those horizon lines are very flat, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're very geometric, as I said before. And are you guided by colour theory, or is it all instinctive, or is it both?
Colour theory plays into it, yeah. So I had I used to have a copy, I've actually lost it a few years ago. I had a copy, my sister bought me a copy of Joseph Albers, I've forgotten the name, it's a colour theory book he wrote, and I've forgotten the name of it. It was a few years ago I had this, but it was basically, it's like the quintessential colour theory book, and he basically explained in detail all his sort of theory about the intersection of colour and how colours interact. Oh, the interaction of colour, that's the one. So that was a really useful book, and that definitely helped my early work, because a lot of my early work is defined by this sort of very stringent use of colour. So that definitely was a great, useful reference point whilst I was developing that kind of style of work. And then obviously since my work has expanded in different kind of areas, but in the 2017 to 2020, I was sort of borderline obsessed with using colour.
I'm interested in how you get these colour series pictures. You have a lot of them shot on walls, but presumably you either paint or in post-production put the colour in, because they're incredibly vivid, aren't they?
So yeah, so it depends on the series. So Colour Fields was heavily post-producted, but then Spatial Visions, that was, as far as I remember, that's all real. So they're obviously, there's some slight adjustments to make things a bit more vibrant, but all those places are, the colours are as they are, as they appear in real life. Obviously, the lighting conditions can affect how you see them. So a lot of them were shot on a bright day to get a nice, to sort of enhance the depth of the colour. But then the Colour Field series was heavily post-production to sort of give a more, selective colour palette. So that was more post-production based.
So those stairs were actually pink, were they?
Which stairs is that? I mean, the series, is it in Spatial Visions?
Yes.
Yeah, the stairs are real. So the staircase is, if you look at the first picture in the series, the 2017 car park, that staircase is connected to that car park space. That's part of the same structure. It's one of those places. I mean, quite a few people in Jersey, I think, have been there now since I photographed it. A couple of local people have done some social media stuff there and that. But it's a weird one. It's almost like you go up there, the top of the car park, it's the 13th floor. There's no one ever parked there, no one ever there. It's a sort of almost like a little, my own little private world in a way, where I can go to.
All right. So Conor Daly has made a car park famous.
I mean, yeah, locally, yeah. It's quite funny because actually a friend of mine who's a local photographer did a fashion shoot there, which I thought was quite funny. So it's good to see, good to see you getting some more use.
And generally speaking, though, your pictures are really not about car parks or stairs. They're really about the way the colours intersect, the way the lines are drawn, in order to create an emotional response. Would I be right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you nailed it on the head there, yeah.
And how has that response been? Have you had lots of feedback?
Yeah, so the car park picture, so to speak, so that Spatial Vision series, that's had quite a bit of press in it. That's been featured probably in two or three magazines. Obviously, locally, it's somewhat infamous, so I'm kind of, amongst people that know me, I know I work, there is a sort of a running joke about my sort of obsession with car parks. So a lot of people that I've worked, that I know professionally in the industry, people that I know personally, that there's a sort of a running joke about car parks. But it's something that for a while I was known for, making mundane things look interesting, I think is the way that I'd phrase it. And it's something that, has definitely served me well in my practice, and that, those pictures were, the development of a new style of work, but it also has followed through into other work I've done, because the fundamental ideas behind this work about composition, colour, has been useful in the creation of new work, the work that's a bit more compositionally complicated and interesting. So it's something that, so basically the point is that I think when I work now, a lot of things I think about are about in terms of composition, they follow through. So when I'm framing, I just did a project last year in the UK, Visions of the Country. So when I was composing these shots, even though that's a much more complex scene, I'm still thinking about the basic compositional rules about, where my horizon is, where is the, what part of the image do I want here, and where do I want this? And generally what I do is it's quite straightforward, actually. I just basically think about the rule of thirds. I think in a composition, I think, where do I want I think every composition photograph I made, I think about three portions of the image, the three parts, the top, middle, and the bottom, and think about where do I want each part of the image in that scene.
I find a lot of your work, particularly the colour fields, spatial visions and so on, they're quite meditative, aren't they? They're sort of things that you can look at for a long time and spark off things in your imagination and your, I suppose, subconscious.
Yeah, so I think that that's, yeah, I think that's true. And I think that a lot of that, the, you know, the pensiveness that and the sort of the melancholy that I tried to put through the work is actually a reference to Mark Rothko. Because I had an experience when I went to go see his, this must have been 10 years ago, and I went to go see one of his monochromes at Tate Modern. It was my first time in London, first time being in Tate Modern. And I mean, I'd known of his work because I'd been researching it. So I managed to go, you know, it was my first experience seeing it. And that the experience of sitting there, being immersed in that painting, that great, you know, huge painting, is something that has stayed with me ever since. And I think it's something I tried to put through my work as well. Maybe not on such an impressive scale, but in some smaller way as kind of as an ode to, you know, to Mark Rothko.
In your still life section, you have a section called intersections, and they look like collages. I mean, did you make a collage and then photograph it?
Yeah, so I didn't actually. People do ask me this. People have always sort of on the fence, like, did you make the collage or did you not? So no, what I did is I photographed a piece of white paper. And then what I did is, so I basically photographed a piece of white paper almost halfway across. So you've got half of half the picture is the paper, and then you've got a line. So you've got an edge basically. And then I added the colours in post, and then that way I had full control over where I could place the piece of paper, and I had full control over the shadows, which aren't real. They're added in post, but it gives a much more refined image. Because the thing is with my work, when I do my still life work, I have to strike a balance between, you know, getting it in camera or doing it in post. And basically what matters to me at the day, it's not about doing it one way or the other. It's about what gives me the best outcome, what gives me the most control. So, you know, my series, for example, another series I did, Matchsticks, that's all done in camera. But with my intersection series, I wanted much more tighter control to get much more precise, you know, precise compositions. And that was the more efficient way of doing it. But it was a really good fun series today. Yeah, I really enjoyed doing it.
There's another series you've done called Phantasmagoria, which is taking pictures of church hall stages.
Yes.
Where did that idea originate?
So, yeah, that's a good one. That was another strange moment of chance and coincidence. So I was in Southampton. I was having radiotherapy, and I was sitting in the hallway. I still remember this clearly. I was sitting in the hallway on my phone, and I was on Reddit. Funny enough, and I don't know how, I think just it was just I was scrolling through and someone posted a picture of a village hall stage, or maybe it's just actually it wasn't even a stage, it was just a village hall, and it was just like there was like an archway with some curtains, and someone's comment was, does this what all village halls look like in the UK? And being from Jersey, I've never heard of a village hall in the UK. There's thousands of them, which I later found out, but in Jersey we don't have them. We have a few parish halls, which I have photographed in the series, but that was later on, but I had no idea about what the village halls was. Like, what's a village hall in the UK? And then I went Googled it, and I clicked on, you know, image search, and then boom, all these, you know, village halls popped up with their stages. And I thought, well, what, you know, it was almost like a Eureka moment. I just thought, oh God, here we go. This is the next series. So I sent out that day. I started sending out, you know, emails just to see what was out there, which is usually how I start a project, just send emails out and then see what comes back. And then it just kind of went from there basically. And then before you know it, I was in the UK for 2 months photographing, must have photographed about 30 stages so far. And it'd been all over the UK doing it, which has been fantastic.
Was it partly the geometric aspect to it that attracted you? It seems that that's a common thread throughout the many of your series. And, you know, there's a certain sort of squareness about stages and so on, and the verticality of the curtains and so on. Is that what attracted you?
Yeah, so the straightforwardness of the straightness, so to speak, of the images, you know, is a reference to the beaches. So the topographical recording of, you know, of a series of an object. So like, you know, their water towers is a famous one, doing a series of water towers over a period of time. So there's definitely, you know, a sort of ode to them and their work. The deeper meaning behind it is that the Phantasmagoria is a reference to Macbeth. and his closing statement at the end of the play, basically talking about how, I can't remember the exact quote, but basically he's talking about how, you know, life is just we're just players upon the stage. It's a contextual reference, but it's kind of what the series implies, that it's about, you know, it is, you know, these are just, for a lot of people, these are just normal, these are just community, you know, the community halls that go, you know, the community comes to a, you know, weekly, and it's not very, it's a quite a mundane thing in itself, but the meaning behind it is probably, I'd say, more deeper. But I think what's interesting to me is a lot of these places are, you know, I think one of them was, I must have been about 100 years old, I think it now, and it was built just after the end of the First World War, and it was a memorial hall. So a lot of them are First World War memorial halls. They would have been built to commemorate soldiers that had died in the war. So there's kind of an interesting element there in that, you know, a lot of the people that have been through these places and have, you know, has been part of their lives, they're either dead or they might still be around, but there's a sort of a ghostly element, I think, to these places.
Yeah, there's a sense of history and a sense of something having been there before. Yeah, your ghost, that's probably a good description. You're going to carry on with that series, are you?
Yeah, so the current plan is so I've spoken to the National Lottery because they have a grant funding process, and they've said to me, yeah, you could potentially apply for funding. And because of the historical significance of the series, I'm going to be putting a proposal to them for quite a large amount of money to basically do eventually photograph 100 stages. So we've got 70 more. And then with that money, also self-publish a book, and then try and raise some money for charity through book sales, and try and get some money going for charity for a charity in the UK.
Well, Connor, what have you got coming up at the moment? What are you doing?
So at the moment, I've just finished a big proposal for a shoot in Norway, photographing the former Soviet mining town, Pyramiden, it's called. So I've just put in a big application for that, which I should be hearing a response back in 6 weeks. And I've just got an email actually from the company that runs it last night, basically hashing out some details. So at the moment, it's just kind of organising that. And that's going to be potentially in June. And then at the moment, I've got an exhibition ongoing in Korea, South Korea. Yep. And I've got an exhibition in Guernsey, and then, God, where else are those? New York, Tokyo.
Well, it sounds like you're meeting some good success there. Well,
yeah, it's, you know, it's got some momentum going. And then today I've got to put in some applications for competitions as well.
Oh, well done. Sounds like you've got quite a lot in the pipeline.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for talking, Connor. It's been great speaking with you.
Yeah, talk soon.
Take care now.
Okay, cheers now. Bye-bye.
Connor Daly, who certainly had plenty of life and work experience for one so young. Thanks for listening. Join me, Bob Choindy, again next week.